And we welcome you to the last spring training edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdahl, C70 at the bat, at C70.com. That's Tara Wellman with me at Tara Wellman on Twitter and at Birds on the Black. Neither one of us happened to sign the largest contract in Cardinal history this week. I think we would still be here, even if we had. But we didn't, you know, I mean, I'm speaking for Tara. I think she would still do this because it's not like we do it for the paycheck right now. So
wait, we don't.
Oh, yeah. I've been meaning to tell you about that. We'll talk about that later.
I keep waiting.
Yeah, I know. Just... yeah. We'll talk about that later. but Paul Goldschmidt, and after the Cardinals saying, hey, we'll just sign him after he gets in front of the hometown fans. You know, I don't know. Maybe they don't trust the hometown fans as much as they say they do. Signed Paul Goldschmidt this weekend. 5-year extension that starts next year. $130 million. It's the most. It fits because it's Paul Goldschmidt and it's the most boring contract ever. It's like no opt outs, no trade clause, and it's straight $26 million a year. It's got some incentives and stuff like that for things like that, but it's basically a plain vanilla, no wonder it didn't take very long to put this contract together kind of thing. It's not inventive, it's not creative, it's here you go. And it's, again, the biggest contract in Cardinal history. Tara, I don't know. I really didn't think that I didn't think Paul Goldschmidt would want to sign until he'd had a chance to see his home for the next few years, if that's what you wanted to look at it. But instead, it seems like he's kind of, you know, fallen in love with the organization even before making it to St. Louis.
Yeah, you know, there was, I don't remember which one of the beat writers in St. Louis described it this way, but they basically said that John Mozeliak just casually strolled up to Paul Goldschmidt with a cup of coffee in his hand and was like, hey, do you want to talk about an extension? and he was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And that, again, is the most Goldie thing ever, I think. No, it is surprising. I was surprised they got it done this soon, but I am actually very impressed that the Cardinals pursued it at this point. I mean, it's become the spring of the extensions, and I think, I mean, this is a whole different conversation. I think that's a sign of these guys who are going to be free agents in the near future kind of terrified by the free agency process right now. I'm not sure that is this shining example of what baseball should be, but the owners are probably happy about it because they're getting these deals done. And every one of the contract extensions that we've seen, people have walked away from looking at it basically going, wow, that's a good deal for the team. Mm-hmm. Which, again, totally different conversation, but it's interesting to see that that's the climate that baseball is in right now, and that John Mozeliak saw it and they decided to make a move. It certainly wouldn't have surprised me if they maybe put a bug in his ear or talked to his agent and said, hey, you know, we're ready to talk about this whenever he's ready to talk about this. Because it seemed clear from the beginning that the Cardinals wanted him to stay. It was just a matter of him figuring out if he wanted to stay. So I think the sort of baseball nerd environment that had to have been spring training with Mike Schilt and with Jeff Albert and with the closeness he's seemed to instantly have with Matt Carpenter was probably really helpful for Paul Goldschmidt deciding, you know, these people are okay. And that's not to say there isn't sort of a baseball nerd environment in every spring training, and that's certainly not a negative. It's just these guys live and breathe baseball, and sometimes they don't. You know, some guys, they have other interests, they have other hobbies, they talk about other things. Baseball is their job. It's not, you know, every thought that they have. And that doesn't seem to be the case for Paul Goldschmidt or for Mike Schilt, which may have been another match made in heaven. So it makes a lot of sense for the Cardinals, obviously. It makes a lot of sense for Paul Goldschmidt, who, while it seems like a team-friendly contract, even though it's the largest in team history, it's not clear what his free agent market would have looked like because of his age, because of the way those contracts tend to be structured now, because he's not been a free agent before. And maybe, you know, there's an unfamiliarity with that whole process. And I've never thought of him as the guy that was going to push it as far as he possibly could to get every last dollar that he possibly could. I just don't think that he thinks about it that way. And so this was a good way for him to get the certainty and the clarity about where he was going to be and what his role was going to be. And it's a good way for the Cardinals to bridge that gap to whatever comes next.
You know, the only reason I thought that he might go on out to free agency and at least try to set some market is because he had made some comments about what free agency looks like now and what it should look like and, you know, what the union would want. And I kind of felt like he might feel like a responsibility to try to get out there and help set a bar. But, you know, again, there is, you're right, he's not a guy that's going to go chase after the last dollar just for that last dollar's sake, I don't think. And
I think once those other extensions started falling into place, a little bit of that pressure to not be that guy probably fell off a little bit because, well, if everyone else is doing it, I guess, you know, you don't have to be that guy that stands up to the team and, you know, whatever.
Well, right. I mean, you know, especially when it's not, this is not Jose Martinez getting extensions. This is
right.
This is Nolan Arenado. This is Mike Trout. These are guys that were going to set the bar, and to some degree already have. I mean, those contracts are still going to be viable, even if they were because of the conditions and lack of leverage and things of that nature, probably more on the team side than the player side. They're still setting a standard, and his does too, to some degree. I mean, people are going to compare his, you know, another guy coming out at 31 or 32 is probably going to get compared to, okay, Paul Goldschmidt got this, I should get this, you know, and, that, and it's still going to happen. So, yeah, there's definitely that. I kind of wonder if John Mozeliak didn't about drop his coffee when Paul Goldschmidt said, yeah, sure, let's talk about that. You know, it's like, you know, right. It's probably one of those things. It's like Mo had on his calendar every 2 weeks. Let's just bring it up, you know, and all of a sudden, oh, you really want to do this? Okay, well,
exactly.
I just happen to have this contract in my back pocket. Why don't you look?
Let me just throw out a number. Yeah. Tell me where we're at.
Yeah,
I mean, you're good with that. Oh, I don't have a pen.
Yeah, but I'll find one. Stay right here. it was a very interesting, and you know. It sounds like, and I listened to Derek Gould a little bit after the fact, and some other comments too. And it's not just the baseball and all that, but it does. You know, again, Paul Goldschmidt's not the kind of guy that's going to compare St. Louis to Arizona or anything like that, and that's the only other organization he knows. But it does sound like the family atmosphere made a big difference for him. I mean, he connected with some of his teammates, but the embrace of his entire family of, you know, letting the kids have some run of spring training, of, you know, getting the bounce house and things of that nature, which are not huge deals and not something that other organizations might not do as well, but that seems to have resonated with him as well.
It's funny that that's come across as a negative in the last couple of seasons. You know, it's not the cool clubhouse. It's not the fun organization. And Paul Goldschmidt was like, no, this is actually perfect.
Well, and anyway, we don't want to go into why those things might be different this year, but it is. It's very, and I think, you know, we have heard ever since Paul Goldschmidt was traded over here how he was kind of this perfect fit for the Cardinals, that everybody inside baseball, you know, what not the Cardinals telling us this. It's national media telling us this. It's people from Arizona telling us this. It's, you know, it's all these people that have been interacting with Paul Goldschmidt, and they say, look, this is the organization he needs to be in. And it's very interesting to see that he felt that way as well. It's just really, really cool. I think it was fun to hear Danny Mac and Derek Gould were talking about, you know, how they had heard that Goldschmidt was Chris Carpenter without the edge. He was Scott Rolen in, you know, professionalism, and Matt Holliday a little bit in personality. And none of these comparisons are bad things at all.
Right.
I mean, these are the kind of people you want on your team. But I did find I think maybe one of the more telling things, and the way that Paul Goldschmidt really does fit into this organization, is one of those stories that came out where he, after the trade in December, asked for a hospital, a children's hospital, to help out with, quietly, without letting anybody know, that he could help in the organization. And that's kind of how I think he got connected to Matt Holliday, because he, you know, he's over at Cardinal Glennon and all that, and seeing what Holliday had done there. It just seems like it's a perfect fit, and you know, it seems like it might have taken a little bit of a load off of him.
Yeah.
Because the last three days of spring, he hit pretty well.
Yeah, he did. Can we just talk about real quick how Albert Pujols offered to sell him his house?
You know, I
did
heard,
you see that?
I heard that somewhere. I didn't know if that was true or.
Yeah, that was in an article. Evidently, they had met over the years, and when the trade happened, Albert Pujols offered to sell him his house in St. Louis.
Let me tell you, I don't know what Albert's house looks like. Although I did, somebody sent me. About a week or so ago, Matt Holliday was selling his house in Florida. Oh, my goodness. You know, you go on the Zillow and you see the pictures inside. That was a house. But I'm guessing that Pujols' house in St. Louis was something similar. And I imagine Paul Goldschmidt's the first guy that's come through St. Louis that could actually afford that house.
Yeah,
you know,
probably true.
It's like, hey, we can sell this thing now.
He didn't take it, by the way. He'd already found another place. So sorry, Albert. You're going to have to wait for another $130 man.
He's gonna,
$130 million,
he's talk to Mike Trout about an investment property in St. Louis. You know?
Be great for Airbnbs, I promise.
Yeah, we can rent it out all the time. Trust me.
Anyway, but to your point, yes, it was nice to see Paul Goldschmidt. Really nice to see the entire offense click and kind of kick it into a gear that made everyone go, Oh, this is what that can look like. But especially for Paul Goldschmidt, saw a little bit more of kind of what we expect from him, and saw it, you know, several days in a row. So that's obviously the primary reason for bringing him to St. Louis. The rest of it, the fact that he's a good guy who wants to do things in the community, is also important to this organization. But he's there to win games, and we saw a lot of how he can do that in this last week of the spring.
But you're right. I mean, the rest of the offense kind of, after being so miserable over the last week, it was like maybe all those lessons from Jeff Albert finally clicked, or
yeah.
If, you know, some bad luck, you know, just some balls started dropping that hadn't been or whatever, it did. I feel like it really did up the excitement level of this team. I mean, we were still, you know, a week or so ago, it's like, you know, okay, I think this team is good. It should be good. Wait till... But you put, you know, put this offense together, then you get Goldschmidt to sign, and I feel like just about everybody in the fan base should be, I don't know if they are, but should be going into this game on Thursday with this idea that this season is going to be something special, and the players seem to think that as well.
They do, and it seems really genuine. I mean, they're always excited about opening day, but I remember even, you know, several weeks back now, listening to Derek Gould's podcast, and he was talking about just how dramatically different this spring training has been from that feel standpoint, from the fact that there was this real genuine belief that they're better than people think they are, and they're going to surprise some people with the games, the wins they're able to string together, and, you know, they're going to have some of these young kids really step up into roles that play a big factor. And you know, we always hear that's not particularly new, but from what Derek Gould was describing, it sounds like it's more genuine and more, I don't know, intense than it has been in the recent past, because we've heard stories time and time again now that there was a lot of tension and there was a lot of angst and there was a lot of, you know, just division and just unhappy players in that clubhouse from spring training on. And as much as they wanted to try to slap a, you know, escape room adventure on as a band-aid, it didn't really go away. And there seemed to be a lack of that kind of tension and that kind of pressure that allowed a lot of these guys to come in, get their work done, be really focused. I mean, we saw it at the beginning of the spring when basically the entire roster was there days in advance of the report date. And they were there not just to be there, but they were there to work and to get going on things. And, you know, they all wanted to be there to do that together. So it does seem like there's maybe a boost in excitement, which there should be when you add Paul Goldschmidt to your roster. Let's be honest, but maybe even more so than the typical opening day excitement, because this team feels like, and here's the thing, I think they feel like they have something to prove. I feel like they have the pieces in place that will allow them to prove it. And I think for the first time in 3 or 4 years, they're starting the season feeling like they're on an even playing field with the Cubs and the Brewers. They haven't been in that. They were going to have to be at their best all the time to keep up with what we expected from the Brewers and the Cubs the last few years. And I think they go in, everyone's kind of saying it's a toss-up for the division right now, and that is exciting when you know that you're the team that can push for that top spot, especially if you feel like you're maybe underrated a little bit at this point. So it's a good sign. It's hard to tell how much that's going to translate into early season results, but it's a good place to be heading into that first week.
And it probably helped. I mean, yes, we had Carlos Martinez, and we still don't know what that all means, but the Cardinals didn't have that season-ending injury in the beginning of spring, like they have had the last couple of years. You know, and the idea that you get Alex Reyes back and you get all these arms that, you know, that helped out last year, and some of them are in Memphis because there's so much good quality stuff here. It would be interesting to compare this year to the first year of Mike Matheny, the newness of the manager, the newness of how things are going to be. And, you know, of course, that team was coming off a World Series win, so obviously there was a little bit difference there and a little bit more veteran presence. But, you know, obviously some of those feelings changed over the years. And we'll see. And maybe that will happen with Mike Shildt as well. I would hope not. I think that he comes at things a little differently. But, you know, after a while, anything can go stale. So we'll have to wait and see. But the Cardinals kind of have finally finalized their... I think we're still waiting on whether Jed Jerko can do anything this week, and he's going to have some time in Florida to work on it. But the Cardinals have basically finalized their 25-man roster and done so kind of in an interesting fashion. I think not many of us expected that Chasen Shreve would be designated for assignment to put Matt Wieters on the roster. I don't know that a lot of people expected this team that... beginning of the spring looked like it had 4 or 5 possible left-handed pitchers to go north with just one in Andrew Miller, a guy that's not going to be used as a lefty specialist, most likely. It feels like, though, maybe for the first time in a while, you know, that really talent won out. They didn't worry about left-handedness or right-handedness. They didn't worry as much about options or things of that nature. They got the guys they thought could win ball games for them, and they did what they could to get them on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jed Jerko being injured to start the year simplified the whole infield decision. Obviously, there would have been, I think, a tough call between Munoz and Robinson. But as far as everyone else, I do think for the most part, you're seeing the guys that should have been on the roster. Now, I know that that Kyle Reese is a big Tommy Edman fan and feels like he probably did enough to earn a spot. But I think there's plenty of opportunity for him to come up and make a splash at some point this season, and I think the time continuing that progress in Memphis is going to be just fine for him. But other than that, yeah, I think that the guys who should be there are pretty much there, and we'll see what happens when Carlos Martinez returns. We'll see if they try to do anything with Brett Cecil when he's off the injured list, and obviously we'll see what happens when Jed Jerko rejoins the team, because he will rejoin the team at some point. But it does, for the most part, feel like this is the roster that it should have been. And that is a little bit different, too, right? The last couple of springs, there's been one or two guys that you're like, okay, well, he's there because of his contract. And I also think there are still some of those guys that are on this roster that people were afraid would be there because of their contract, but they actually had solid springs. So it eliminated a little bit of that conversation. So, Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably part of the reason this team feels good about what they're doing now, too, and feels good about where they're at heading into the season, because they can look up and down this roster and give real justifiable reasons for every single one of those guys who's made that 25-man roster. So that's a good place to be in as well.
Yeah. And let's be fair. I mean, as much as we might want to say, hey, this is a new direction for the Cardinals, hey, they got somewhat lucky because Brett Cecil and Luke Gregerson are not healthy, and they could start the year at the safe list, because if those guys were healthy, I don't know about Gregerson. If Gregerson had a bad spring, I think they probably would have cut him. But I think they would have done as much as they could to give Cecil at least some sort of chance. And, you know, it's hard to believe that he had like a zero ERA for the spring. as much struggles as he had, I think he only had like two legitimate innings. But so those guys help. And those guys are going to probably make an appearance at some point in time this year. At least Cecil will. You know, what's going to happen? You know, what are people going to think if John Brebbia goes to the minors because Brett Cecil's coming off the disabled list?
Well, let me tell you. Not going to be good.
Yeah, it was kind of a rhetorical question. But, you know, I mean, there is that. But, yeah, you've got to give them credit for where it's due. And they did take, you know, I think the backup catcher shows it easily as it could have been to let Francisco Pena be that guy. They went out and actively found somebody that should be better than Francisco Pena. We'll see if that happens, you know, given what Francisco Pena did last year. It almost have to, at least offensively. But, you know, Wieters did not have the strongest of springs either, so we'll see how that goes, and it really doesn't matter when Yadi plays 150 games.
Right.
But
if that guy's determining your season, then you're doing it wrong.
But I think that's also that's different too, right? Because we've talked so much about how much Yadi Molina gives these seals of approval to Tony Cruz and Jason LaRue and Francisco Pena, especially last year, when that's why I think Francisco Pena wound up getting a lot more starts than Carson Kelly did in that time period. You know, Yadi has pull there, and he should, but it feels like the organization's taking a little bit of that back now and say, yes, we love you, Yadi, but we're going to pick who we want to pick here.
And to some degree, I don't want to harp on this too much, but maybe Yadi doesn't feel like he has to. Maybe there's a trust factor with him that was eroded a little bit in the last year or two previously. Yeah. So maybe there's not the feel by Yadi that he kind of has to take the reins.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to rely on you here because as far as I know, Yadi has not taken Instagram over this. So,
he has not. So maybe. Unless it's happened in the last, 30 minutes or so.
Right. So it feels like that maybe it's true. Maybe there is that relationship. I mean, maybe it's like, hey, you know, there's that communication that she'll say, look, I understand what you're saying here, but this guy gives us a better chance to win. And, you know, there's nothing Yadier Molina wants to do more than win. He may think he knows how to, you know, the way they're going to win. But, you know, if you can convince him that that's how, you know, we can get another ring for you and for Adam Wainwright and some of these veterans that should, and some of these young guys that may have opportunities in the future, but you don't know. I mean, there's a lot of young guys from that 2006 team that never were in the majors again, you know, or definitely didn't get another ring. So, I think that's a good point. I think that there probably is a little bit more communication, as we've talked about, but also a trust factor there. Now, along with the roster choices, they also finalized the rotation in this, and we kind of, well, I think this is another situation where it's a little bit different than they could have done, because it could have been very easily for them to send Dakota Hudson to the minor leagues and free and not have to lose Trayson Shreve or, you know, and let John Gant be that fifth starter. But they said Dakota Hudson makes us better, and so they put him in the fifth spot in the rotation. They put Gant in the bullpen. Was that, the way Dakota Hudson was pitching this spring, it's hard to say that was a surprise, but in looking back at the past, maybe there was a little bit.
Yeah, again, I think it shows, you know, we keep talking about, well, the Cardinals said they're going for it this year, and using that to complain about why they didn't sign Bryce Harper or Craig Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel. But look, a lot of these decisions are evidence of the Cardinals going for it this year. This isn't about, well, we have to respect the contracts or we have to, you know, maintain the depth that they like to have to the fourth and fifth level. You know, this isn't about that at this point. And like you said, some of the injuries kind of answered those questions for them. They didn't have to make the really tough choices, but the choices they did have to make point to, no, we're going to do everything we can to put the best team possible on the field. And right now, the best option for the Cardinals in that fifth spot is Dakota Hudson. I love John Gant. I think that he did a great job last year. I think he can do a great job out of the bullpen. And if there's a starter that runs into trouble, because there are still question marks about some of the starters, he can be the guy that comes in and, you know, pitches two or three innings and saves the rest of the bullpen for the rest of the series. So it's, I think this was the right choice based on the performances so far, based on the progress Dakota Hudson has made, and kind of based on the ceiling of those two players, right? Because as great as John Gant can be, I still think Dakota Hudson's ceiling is higher. So there's the potential for him to be even better than John Gant would be at his best. And he proved why a lot this spring. So you give him a chance. And not only is the fact that they're giving him a chance and putting the guy on the mound who performed the best this spring a sign of them going for it, but the fact that they're really kind of comfortable with turning over a lot of those important roles to young guys who are to some degree unproven is a departure from the last 4 or 5 years. And that to me is as important in 2019 as anything else is, because this will give them sort of a baseline for all of those guys and what they can be at the major league level, not just as really terrific AAA players. And that's a thing they're going to have to know moving forward as well.
I look at this bullpen, the way it's constructed, and I think it's really interesting. You know, we talked so many times about a reliever under glass, a guy that needed to be there if a starter couldn't go. There are a lot of guys that can do that job this time, which means you don't have to keep any of them reserved, you know. You can, you know, if Alex Reyes comes in and pitches an inning in relief, and the next day Adam Wainwright can't get out of the third, well, then you've got John Gant. You've got the others, especially later on if Carlos Martinez is one of those options. You got Mike Myers, who could probably still throw a couple of innings. I know, obviously, they used him more in a one-inning stint last year, but he could stretch out. I mean, there are other options, and so that means pretty much every night, depending on usage, I mean, you've got good options, and you don't have to worry about, you know, Joe Kelly sitting out there for 3 weeks and not pitching, or Tyler Lyons doing the same thing.
Or Mike Myers.
Or, you know, name one. It seems like there's a whole bunch of them. And it could be that Adam Wainwright becomes one of those guys later on, you know, if he slides out of the rotation. And I think a lot of people expect maybe by the end of the season he will, if only to find room for Alex Reyes and Carlos Martinez. So I like the mix. I like the ability to use guys pretty much at any time. And we're still projecting on Mike Shildt a little bit on how he's going to do this stuff. But I think that's going to be the. I think that's what there's just a little bit of excitement there of finding out what kind of manager Mike Shildt really is when he's got a contract, when he's got the whole year ahead of him, and doesn't have to put this massive, you know, scramble in July to try to get back in the race. You know, he can start on day one and start really being the manager he wants to be. You know, is he still going to be that kind of aggressive Captain Hook type of guy, or is he going to give the starter some more leash? Lots of questions there, but I think it's exciting to find out.
And I think that the construction of this roster is a pretty clear hint about how Mike Shildt wants to manage this team. We've seen that in past years where the roster was constructed in a way that fit the manager. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the same thing could potentially be said about this roster, in that specifically in the bullpen, it's we've joked in the last few years about how poorly the Cardinals have used flexibility, how they depend on it too much and then don't use it very well. This is a bullpen designed to be flexible. It's intentionally without sort of bookends on job descriptions, and it's that way by design. That's why when you look at this, you can't say, oh, well, this is the long man, this is the setup man, this is the closer, this is the lefty specialist. Like, any one of those guys in any given situation could be the one that they go to, and that's a really exciting kind of flexibility when you feel like the guy at the helm is going to take advantage of having it, not just let it kind of go to waste because, you know, you have all these guys who can play multiple roles, but you're not using any of them effectively to whatever the game situation is. So I'm very curious to see how Mike Schilt deploys that bullpen, because it's flexible by design, but it's not flexible in a way that you're like, well, if it's not this guy, I guess it can be this guy. It's like any one of them can pitch in just about any situation, and you feel like you have a pretty good shot of walking away victorious. And that's, to me, as much a sign of where the organization feels Mike Schilt will go in his in-game strategy as the actual guys and their skill sets on the roster.
It is a little bit interesting, and maybe we give too much credit, but it feels like this year we believe that Mike Schilt had a hand in constructing this roster versus the last 4 or 5 years where, especially in the offseason, it felt like Mo was trying to work around the manager's shortcomings, if you will, to make it rigid, to make it loose, to give them this option or that option, or, you know, take away that option. It really feels like the whole organization's on the same page now. And, you know, we'll see how long that lasts, and we'll see. I'm sure there's going to come times where Mike Schilt's going to want to do something that Mose Locke and Gersh are not that thrilled with. But, you know, I also feel like the front office is going to give him that leeway. So it's going to be kind of fun to see. There's a lot of questions for about this season. There's a lot of possibilities. There's a lot of excitement. And we all get to find out a lot about it starting on Thursday when the Cardinals show up in Milwaukee. Well, they show up in Milwaukee like tomorrow night after this game with Memphis. And then they don't leave for like a week, which is... I've never been to, but you probably have. I've never been to Milwaukee. I don't know that I'd want to spend a week there.
You know, it's actually better than I think advertised, but a lot of it depends on what you're doing and where you're staying and all of those things. So it's a weird vacation spot, but I'm sure they'll make the best of it.
And again, it seems like everybody... It's definitely better than what the Mets are doing, apparently. I was reading about Noah Syndergaard and not being excited about going to a couple of minor league towns for workouts. I didn't even look like it was games. So that's a thing.
That's so Mets.
Yeah.
That's so Mets.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll find out. The Cardinals play, I think the pregame coverage starts at noon on Thursday. Games at 1:05 or 1:15 or whatever it may be. Look it up, but that's right in that time. And it'll be on, of course, Fox Sports Midwest. We get Danny Mac. We get Brad Thompson getting the call for opening day.
There you go.
That's a gamble right there.
Bringing big time.
Guy in. you know. So we'll see how that develops, but we'll look forward to it. So next week when we're talking to you, we will be at the end of the first series. We will know what this team looks like and compare it to the Brewers, and I know that we're looking forward to it. But until then, that's Tara, and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under Podcasts, and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.